Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Are Texas students learning history as it really happened? As the State Board of Education prepares to approve a new crop of social studies textbooks for use in public schools, a watchdog group called the Texas Freedom Network Education Fund has released a report that points out alleged biases and inaccuracies in those texts. Among the criticisms are claims that some books overemphasize Judeo-Christian influence on the founding philosophies of the United States, understate the inequities of segregated schools, fail to explain the pros and cons of capitalist economies, and inaccurately portray the teachings of religions other than Christianity. Joining us to talk about the controversy are two guests who have been critical of some of the contents of the new proposed textbooks. Kathleen Wellman is Dedman Family Professor of History at SMU. She recently spoke before a State Board of Education panel to voice her concerns about some of the proposed content of the new books. David Brockman teaches courses in religious studies as an adjunct instructor at SMU, as well as courses in religions and theology at Bright Divinity School. His most recent book is Dialectical Democracy Through Christian Thought, Individualism, Relationalism, and American Politics. And he was a member of the scholarly panel that reviewed textbooks on behalf of the Texas Freedom Network. We want to note that we will also hear this hour from State Board of Education member Thomas Ratliff, who, like other members of the SBOE board that we reached out to, was unable to join us for today's live discussion, but he did speak on the phone with Think assistant producer Lindsay Connect, so we will get a word from him later. For now, welcome to two of my guests to the studios of Think.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So how does the State Board of Education select the textbooks that will be used in public schools?
I guess I can take that. The process basically involves the State Board of Education putting out bids for textbooks to the different textbook publishers, and they cover the State Board of Education is responsible for textbooks across all disciplines. This particular go-around involved social studies textbooks. And basically, the State Board of Education calls for bids from publishers. They list the curriculum standards, the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, or the TEKS, as they're known, and any other requirements. The publishers submit the completed textbooks for review by the Texas Education Agency and state review panels, which we'll probably be talking about. And then based on recommendations from the state review panels and the Texas Education Agency, or TEA, staff, the State Education Commissioner prepares a preliminary report to the State Board. Then there is a basically a public hearing, public input stage, where Texas residents may file written comments on the textbooks and may testify at the State Board's public hearings. And that's Kathleen and I both participated in that, along with something like 48 other people,
right,
back on September 16th. Then as a result of the TEA process, the review process, and the public hearings, the publishers are then asked are given a list of changes to make. The publishers then report back to the State Board all the revisions that they plan to make to their textbooks, and then the State Board of Education votes to either reject a textbook or to place it on one of two lists, approved list. One is the conforming list, which in which the textbook meets all of the standards, and the non-conforming list, which in which a textbook meets at least 50% of the standards. Then local school districts are able to basically select any textbook they want from the approved list, as well as textbooks that are rejected by the State Board. But it's my understanding that most school districts will choose from the approved list because it doesn't involve a certification process, which has to go on if the if a rejected textbook is selected. So it's easier for the school districts to.
Are history and social studies textbooks always a source of concern? Is there something special about this round of textbook approvals?
I think that history instruction has been controversial for some time, particularly in Texas. And so these battles get fought over and over again. I think one of the things that's been particularly significant is that what historians study has been somewhat different since the 1960s. I think you could make a case that before the GI Bill, the people who got PhDs in history went to elite universities and were largely elite white men. Since the 1960s, a number of people from the working class, women, minorities, have gotten PhDs, and not surprisingly, they wanted to see how those groups featured in American history. And when, say, for instance, someone studied Latino history in the United States, they didn't necessarily find the same kind of heroic story that had been consistently told in the past. So American history got much more complicated. It got more interesting. It got more diverse. It was based on very sound scholarship, but it told a much more complicated story. And since the 1960s, there's been increasing resistance to the complications of that kind of story. And so what we saw in the TEIC standards in 2010 was a desire to simplify that story in a very specific way. And so the reviewers like David and myself and some people that were commissioned by Texas Freedom Network looked through those textbooks to see how they applied standards that were really problematic and ahistorical from the very beginning.
If you ask historians to self-identify politically and ideologically, are they more liberal than the general U.S. population?
I would suspect that historians are, perhaps. But I think the public has a misconception that if I were politically liberal, I would go out and try to construct a politically liberal history. Instead, I might be more inclined as a female to write about women's history, though I've also worked on many elite white male philosophers. But the other thing is, I think historians tend to be politically liberal because they are not in the 1%. Professors study for a very long time. They defer income for 10 years. They identify with social programs, and they, I would guess, are more progressive than the general population.
I would say also one other issue that comes up is the complexity of the story that scholars are telling. Often that tends the complexity tends to be construed, maybe misconstrued by members of the public as being a criticism of the status quo. And so whether a scholar is critical of the status quo or upholds the status quo often doesn't enter into the debate so much as the complexity of the story that they're trying to tell. And that's the kind of thing that Kathleen was just talking about how the history of the world and history of the United States and Texas has opened up quite a bit, become more complex, and that's often, I think, misunderstood as a liberal perspective.
Okay. Is the inherent complexity of history part of the problem here? Because you might want to explain all the nuances of, say, the pros and cons of a market-driven economy, but that's really hard to get into the brain of a second or third grader who's engaging with this kind of content at a very broad view for the first time.
Certainly the complexities of history make the story difficult to tell, but I think one of the reasons I got involved in particular is that there are ways to tell a simple story and there are ways to misrepresent the story. And a number of the TEIC standards deliberately misrepresent the past in a way that I found really of considerable concern. And part of the reason I became concerned about this is it's beginning to have an impact on students when they come to college. They don't understand the Enlightenment anymore, in part because Christian curricula and now the Texas state curricula really misrepresents the Enlightenment and its role in both world history and American history. And that's the reason I specifically got involved in this issue.
I have an example of how this complexity issue actually manifests in the textbook. We had one geography textbook, and this, if I remember correctly, was a sixth grade geography, world geography textbook. And in this textbook, just basically one page apart. So on one page, we see a description of the spread of Christianity. And this is the quote from the textbook. During the period of colonization, Europeans spread Christianity around the globe. It is now the largest and most widespread religion, end quote. Turn the page. Spread of Islam. In the centuries after Muhammad's death, Muslims spread their religion by conquest, end quote. Well,
so did Christians.
Right. The Europeans also spread by conquest, and Muslims in the centuries after Muhammad's death also spread their religion by trade and by missionary work. That was particularly true in sub-Saharan Africa, in Asia, and so on. And so the dark history of Christianity's spread by conquest, particularly in the Americas, is not mentioned in this particular passage. Now, the interesting thing is that this same textbook, many pages later, mentions the spread by trade and missionary work as well as conquest. So it's a fairly simple change for the textbook publisher to go back and add that to this particular sentence. It would also be a fairly simple change to go back and adjust that description of Christianity to basically match what's said about Islam. That is, it's spread by conquest, by trade, by colonization, by missionary work. So, and I don't think that's too advanced for a sixth grader. I think our sixth graders in Texas are perfectly capable of handling that level of complexity.
And to be clear, you want it to match not because it's only fair that it matches, but because it's true.
Because it's true. That's right.
Yeah. We're speaking this hour about keeping Texas textbooks fair and accurate in social studies with David Brockman, who teaches courses in religious studies as an adjunct instructor at SMU, as well as courses in religions and theology at Bright Divinity School. Kathleen Wellman is with us as well. She is Dedman Family Professor of History at SMU. You can join us at 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering a new certificate program in project management November 3rd through 7th on the SMU campus. Information at smu.edu/project-management.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about keeping Texas social studies textbooks fair and accurate. The State Board of Education is set to approve next month a new crop of social studies textbooks that reflect standards set in 2010. Both my guests today have testified before the State Board of Education about some items of content within those textbooks that are of concern. David Brockman teaches courses in religious studies as an adjunct instructor at SMU, as well as courses in religions and theology at Bright Divinity School. Kathleen Wellman is Dedman Family Professor of History at SMU. How do board members choose the experts that help them assess the quality of curriculum? No matter how smart they are, they can't know about every single subject that they are called upon to select curriculum for.
This is a somewhat mysterious process to us. There was a great deal of discussion about the process of selecting official, what we'll call official reviewers, the official textbook reviewers, at the state board hearing where Kathleen and I appeared, and apparently one of the major considerations is a kind of geographical balance of some sort. A problem that the Texas Freedom Network spotted in its analysis of the official review panels was that out of 130 reviewers, only four could be identified as university or college professors, faculty members. Of those four, and this was for the social studies review, of those four, two don't seem to have social studies specializations. One teaches linguistics at a college or university. The other one teaches human resource management. And so there is a serious underrepresentation of college and university faculty on the state review panels. There are many teachers, classroom teachers, and that makes a lot of sense. But then there are also a lot of other members of the public. But we know that at least two people who are known to us, one Ed Countryman, who was a colleague of mine on this Texas Freedom Network panel, applied to be on the state review panel, and his application was not accepted. And then Kathleen as well.
So. I got to be the poster child for the rejected academic because Texas Freedom Network ran an ad listing my credentials, and I have a PhD, and I've been teaching for 30 years, and
You were not invited to participate.
Right, and I decided to participate because I wanted to see how the TEEC standards had been applied and how textbook writers had dealt with the challenges that really TEEC throws at them, because they're given some standards that are achronological and ahistorical, and yet they have to integrate them to be accepted for the Texas market. And, of course, their profits depend on being accepted at the Texas market. So it's crucial. And I think when I looked at some of these textbooks, they had to go through considerable intellectual gyrations to somehow come up with something that made the TEEC standards fit their histories.
Well, let's get some insight here on how the experts are appointed by the elected members of the State Board of Education. We're going to hear from Thomas Ratliff, who is a Republican member of the State Board of Education. He represents District 9 in Mount Pleasant. He, like other members of the SBOE, said he wished he could join us live here today, but did speak on the phone a few days ago with assistant producer Lindsay Connect.
It's really hard to know what questions my colleagues ask the experts that they appoint, so I can only speak to what I ask, and I really don't ask much. I look at somebody's resume and their experience and have a kind of a subjective measurement of whether I think that person is qualified to review the books, either from an educator's perspective or an expert's perspective. I just want to make sure that these folks are qualified to render an opinion to help us have the best books possible.
Is it your sense that other kinds of books that have this much influence get more, in other words, what kinds of standards are applied to reviewing textbooks that will be used in a university setting? Does this sort of expert selection reflect what is done by scholars?
No. I mean, publisher were going to publish a university textbook, they would usually commission a group of experts in the field who could divide up whatever the subject is, because we may have expertise in a particular century or a particular kind of history. So textbooks are usually a team effort, and then the product is reviewed by a number of other scholars in the field, and so people who would use those textbooks evaluate them. There isn't an external board or a state board or anything like that for university textbooks.
Is it reasonable to be concerned that changing the kinds of content that we are teaching Texas students will, in fact, diminish pride in people's being American or their sense of patriotism or their sense of unity as citizens of this country?
I don't believe so. I think that it is possible to celebrate the United States of America and emphasize our prizing diversity and diverse viewpoints. That is, we are a country. We're not the only country in the world. I don't want to fall into kind of American exceptionalism here. But we are a country that has unevenly, perhaps, inconsistently, perhaps, but in general, has welcomed people from all over the world to come and make their own contribution to our society and our culture. And part of the reason for opening up and complexifying the textbooks that Kathleen talked about is to expose students to those gifts that people other than Anglo-Saxon males have given to this country over the years. Unfortunately, many of the standards that are on the books now for social studies are pushing pushed the story back towards American exceptionalism, a Christian America myth, a sort of triumphalist version of Christianity in world history. So it's a it's basically giving a kind of one-sided and mythical version of what America's gifts are, rather than celebrating what we really have.
Okay. And I think, honestly, it does a disservice to students to think that they need myth rather than history. Because for one thing, as soon as they get out in a broader world, they're going to understand that the myths that they were told were erroneous, which might ultimately make them doubt everything good they had heard about America. Whereas if they understand that history tells a tale of triumphs, defeats, good actions, bad actions, it's a really messy story, then history might also seem more relevant to what they're doing as well, instead of something, you know, from 1800 that they can't possibly relate to because everyone was so good and so inspiring and so mythic.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Justin on the line in Coppell. Hey, Justin.
Hi. I just want to say I'm so glad y'all are talking about this, and I feel like a lot of emotions, like what those people just said. Like, when I first went to college and had a history class, like, I hated America for several years because, like, I had just been fed that exceptionalist, you know, myth. And when I learned, like, how complex and how gray things were in the past, like, it really made me angry, like, that I'd been lied to and that, like, things weren't how, you know, how I had been told. And, you know, now, like, I appreciate knowing all the stories of good and bad of, you know, the, you know, white Anglo-Saxons and, you know, like, the Chicanos and all the immigrants. I love the whole story, and it makes me understand my world a lot better because I know the whole story. And I'm glad that there's people like y'all that are fighting to get the whole story told in the schools, because it's a disservice to students. And if we don't know our history, you know, like the old adage says, you know, we're going to repeat it.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for your call. Do you all want to comment on that?
Can I say, Justin, you sound like a fabulous history student, and I'm so delighted that you called in.
Do we run a risk if we look to find content that all sides agree on? And we should note that there is plenty of content in these textbooks that reviewers and the members of the State Board of Education and even critics of some aspects of the textbooks say these certain areas are fine. They're correct. If we go to what is neutral to all parties, do we write boring textbooks if we leave out things that are sources of consternation?
I don't, at least from my point of view as a religion scholar, I don't see how we can avoid angering some people with the story that we tell. Religion, and my focus in the review process was on balance and accuracy in the coverage of world religions in these social studies textbooks. And basically, no matter how you portray a particular religion, someone is going to be upset about it. But we can't – that's the cost of doing business, basically. We have to portray religions fairly, accurately, warts and all, including my own religion, Christianity. And we need to tell the story as it actually happened rather than with some kind of ideological slant. And I believe that if that happens, and if enough people are involved in the process, not just classroom teachers, average citizens, but also scholars, that we will move toward a kind of rich story that can be told to our public school students.
Another thing that creates really boring textbooks is the fact that many of the standards lay out a laundry list of people who must be discussed on a particular issue.
So you get three sentences about everybody.
You don't even get any sentences. You just get the list. Huh. And what is a student going to do with a list of 12 names of people who might be significant founding fathers when They've never heard of them. They will never hear of them again. But they've been added because, in most cases, they've been added because they've been identified as practicing Christians. So we have to expand the list. The list is meaningless. The student gets no context for any of it. They just get a list. And I think that truly creates really horrifyingly boring texts. And so I think that a way to maybe overcome that would be to say, instead of specifying, to say that students must know about significant political philosophers who influenced the founding of America, and leave it unspecified. There are plenty of them. Teachers could then decide. But when TEKS mandates a particular list to serve a particular purpose, it gets really pointless and boring in many cases.
We're speaking this hour with Dedman Family Professor of History at SMU, Kathleen Wellman, and David Brockman, who teaches courses in religious studies at SMU, as well as religions and theology at Bright Divinity School. We're talking about keeping Texas textbooks fair and accurate. There are new social studies textbooks set to be approved by the State Board of Education next month. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, and we'll be back to our conversation about Texas textbooks in just a couple of minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering a new certificate program in project management November 3rd through 7th on the SMU campus. Information at smu.edu/project management.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about keeping Texas social studies textbooks fair and accurate. My guests are Kathleen Wellman of SMU and David Brockman of Bright Divinity School and SMU. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Is there a concern that we are focusing on things in K-12, you know, the placement of a word like some to modify a phrase that maybe won't stick with students and needs to be treated later on when they either explore history as young adults at a university setting or on their own, in their own explorations of history?
I don't know about the sum. You mean including?
Including one of the phrases that I know was of concern was that there was discussion about segregation, and lots of people are very concerned about the characterization that some segregated schools for black children were not as good as white schools. It seems to me that historians universally agree that, nearly universally agree that that was not the case.
Right.
That segregated schools were definitely different in quality, but in phrases like this, I wonder if students are paying as much attention to that modifier as their teachers and the adults worried about what they're learning are paying attention to.
I would suspect so, and I think it's not a minor issue, and so the sum is deliberate, and it's intended to suggest that segregation wasn't bad, and in the same way, the arguments are made that way about slavery as well, that some slaves were happy, and you know, so word choices, when they are made to convey a specific point, I don't think the point is lost, certainly not for the adults, and I suspect it's not lost for the students either. And
you feel like it's there for a reason.
I know it's there for a reason, because they're insertions.
Well, now let's listen once again to Thomas Ratliff, who is a member of the State Board of Education, for his perspective on the influence that books have on what Texas students learn.
I lay my head down at night on the pillow knowing that these books are put in the hands of educators and parents and students. And just because it's in a book or just because it's printed a certain way in a book does not guarantee that it's going to be taught, number one, or taught in a certain way, number two. So I think people need to just take a collective breath and realize when you turn that over to hundreds of thousands of teachers and hundreds of thousands of parents and students, life happens. The real world happens in that classroom. And so I really don't get terribly hung up about certain biased statements or certain things that some people are looking for to score political points, because at the end of the day, it's going to be taught the way that teacher feels like it needs to be taught.
It was Thomas Ratliff, a Republican member of the State Board of Education, who represents District 9 in Mount Pleasant. We did reach out to Ratliff and other members of the SBOE board to join us today, but they were unable to make it to the live conversation this afternoon. Any response?
Can I say I would like to believe that that's the case, and it may well be the case. I'm certain that many students have not absorbed many things that I have said. On the other hand, why should textbook writers be required to insert things that are erroneous? Why start from that premise and then require that teachers and parents and students themselves be able to correct what has been deliberately inserted to convey error?
I would also, and I'd like to say also that I have great respect for Thomas Ratliff. I watched him in action in the public hearing back on September 16th. I like a lot of what he's doing for the board, but I have to respectfully disagree with him on this issue. The textbooks set a baseline. Basically, they set a kind of standard against which the classroom teaching will be done. And if that baseline is wrong, if it's inaccurate, if it's imbalanced, if it has errors of omission and so on, we need to fix the baseline.
What works in the textbooks that you have both looked at?
I'm glad you asked that, Chris, because it looks like often that we're beating up on the publishers, beating up on their textbooks by pointing out errors and so on. But this Texas Freedom Network study that was done, an independent study of the textbooks that are being considered, probably for the next 10 years, also found many positive aspects, positive features in the textbooks. And this is one. This is from McGraw-Hill World Geography textbook, middle school, basically sixth grade. And in accompanying a video, BBC video, on the Ottoman Empire and events in Turkey over the last century, there is a teacher's edition set of discussion questions, one of which deals with the recent French laws prohibiting Muslim women from wearing the veil in public settings. And this is an excellent way to basically make a very controversial topic, which this is, come alive for the students. Have students imagine that they're women living in France and think about how they would react to the new law. Organize students into small groups, then divide each group in half, with one half in favor of the law because it promotes equality, and the other half opposed to the law because it criminalizes self-expression. Then have students verbally debate the issue within each group. And I think that would make for very interesting classroom discussion there.
Can I say, too, I was deliberately looking at a whole range of American history textbooks, world history textbooks, and American government to see how they handled the specification that Thomas Aquinas be considered as someone who shaped the founding of America. This was an insertion. It was designed to give, I believe, a religious overtone to nature's law and nature's God. Instead of having a deist, you had a nice Catholic theologian. This makes no historical sense whatsoever. And I was pleased to see that the textbooks could not incorporate it and so did not. So to some degree, the textbook publishers themselves are self-censoring some of the TEKS requirements that are most ahistorical.
Well, not self-censoring so much as correcting, I guess. Right, yeah.
Or not including,
that's right.
I mean.
John Calvin is another example of that. John right. Calvin was also cited along with Thomas Aquinas as someone influential in America's founding. And many of the textbooks that I looked at, world history textbooks, could not find, at least didn't make an explicit reference to John Calvin being influential in America's founding. So they're not committing the error that the standards seem to ask them to make, in other words.
What should parents do who are concerned about the content of their children's textbooks?
I think if they're able and they are able to provide a corrective, they should read them with their children and talk about what's there and talk about other things students might want to consider. I know parents, if you're doing your kid's math homework, you may not consider his history homework your biggest problem as you're trying to make math make sense. But if you are able to read these books with your student, with your children, and talk about what they're learning and what they're thinking, I think that's the best thing to do, though I also appreciate that very many parents have very little time these days. And so I think it's unfortunate if we expect parents to provide a corrective, because parents are not typically historians either.
I think also one other important thing, and this, you know, I was not plugged into the public school textbook debate prior to my involvement in this go round, but one thing that's become very apparent to me is the importance of down ballot elections. Basically, and the State Board of Education members serve 4-year terms. They're from districts, so there is someone who is representing you, the listener, on the State Board of Education. And I didn't pay attention to those races in the past. Unfortunately, the press doesn't often cover those down ballot races, perhaps as much as should be done. So it will take some hunting to find out what the candidates for your representatives' qualifications are, their positions, and so on. But I think it's really important, because that is to pay attention to those down ballot races, because the State Board of Education members have a tough job to do, but they also have a very important job to do. They have a lot of influence on what our kids learn in school.
Are Texas curriculum standards as influential beyond the borders of the state as they have always been?
Texas and California are the two big markets.
Because we buy the most textbooks.
We buy the most textbooks, and publishers don't want to do a state-by-state edition, so they want to make the Texas and California editions as broadly applicable as possible.
That's right. And publishers also want to have, as I understand it, want to have the State Board of Education imprimatur, basically the approval of the State Board of Education, so that they can sell in the Texas market, but also that helps in sales in other markets as well. And even some people are saying now that the influence of Texas is waning because of electronic textbooks. In fact, many that we reviewed are entirely online now. They have no hardcover manifestation at all. That is, so changes will be much easier to make electronically. But Texas still has a centralized process with a set of standards, and many other states continue to follow the standards that Texas has established.
David Brockman teaches courses in religious studies as an adjunct instructor at SMU, as well as courses in religions and theology at Bright Divinity School. Kathleen Wellman is Dedman Family Professor of History at SMU. It's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
We also heard this hour from Thomas Ratliff. He was recorded. He's a Republican member of the State Board of Education who represents District 9 in Mount Pleasant. He spoke over the phone to our assistant producer, Lindsay Connect.